This week's parasha is Parashas Mishpatim. At the end of Parashas Mishpatim, we find a pasuk that speaks about Matan Torah, and it says that Moshe, Aaron, Nadav, and Avihu, and Shivim Mizikne Yisrael, they went and they did something that they weren't supposed to do, the Zakenim, Vayiru Es Elikei Yisrael. They looked at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Kaviyachol, the Sachas Raglov, Kemaisa Libnei Sasapir, Uchetza Mashmaim Latayar. That under his feet, whatever this means, but under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's feet, was the likeness of a sapphire brick. There was a sapphire brick, a Livnas HaSapir, and that was underneath HaKadosh Baruch Hu's feet. That was the image that the Zkenim saw when they looked HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Matan Torah, at this Hiskalos, at this divine revelation of Matan Torah, and they saw a sapphire brick. If you look in Rashi, what's going on with the sapphire brick? He haisa lefana b'shas ha-shibud. This brick was in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu during the period of servitude in Mitzrayim. Lizkar tzarasan shal Yisrael, in order to remember the tzara of Klal Yisrael, that Klal Yisrael shayim shubadim b'maisa levenim, Klal Yisrael were busy making bricks and setting bricks and building, and they were... It was unbelievable toil that they were suffering with, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu kept this brick before him, under his feet, in order to remember the tzara of Klal Yisrael. If you look a little deeper into Chazal to see what the story behind this brick was, Gavriel brought this brick in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this brick was very important historically because as a result of this brick, HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved Klal Yisrael on the Yam Suf. The Medrash says that there was a malach called Uzzah, Ayin Vav Zayin Aleph, and this malach Uzzah was mekatrig against Klal Yisrael. He prosecuted Klal Yisrael at Kriyas Yam Suf. And he uses a lashon that's familiar to us, manishtana elu meelu. Why is it different? And I always thought that maybe that's why the manishtana is termed as such, in order to allude to this question that hung over Klal Yisrael at this very critical moment. Manishtana elu meelu. Why is it that Klal Yisrael is different than the Egyptians? Why are you prepared to drown the Egyptians and let Klal Yisrael go free? They both did Avodah Zarah. Klal Yisrael apparently, whatever this means, but they were Avodah Zarah in Mitzrayim. And so this Malach Uzzah was indicting Klal Yisrael that Mechitesa, that you should save Klal Yisrael and let the Egyptians drown. Maybe they should all drown. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Medrash says, looks at this brick and he comes down Kaviyachol from the Kisei HaKavod, and he saves Klal Yisrael with Kriyas Yam Suf. If you look in the Targum Yainasan on this pasuk, it says that this brick was made from an uber, from a fetus that the mother miscarried into cement. What was the story behind this? There was a woman who was pregnant. She was not expected to go and do any brickwork and do any heavy lifting, but her husband was. Her husband in Mitzrayim was involved, b'chaymer uvelevenim, he was preparing the bricks, and she felt bad for him. So she went and she helped him make the bricks, and apparently it was too much work for her. And she miscarried the baby. The baby fell into the tit that they were busy with. Gavriel went and made from this baby this sapphire brick and put it under HaKadosh Baruch Hu's feet. So we're getting a little bit more of a broader view of exactly the history, the background, the context of this brick. And I think that perhaps the lesson that we can come out from this composite sketch of all of these different Chazal and the Targum Yainasan, Rashi, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came down to help Klal Yisrael. He didn't have to. He was sitting in the Kisei HaKavod. He did not have to get his hands dirty, Kaviyachal. He did not have to come and rescue Klal Yisrael. Maybe Klal Yisrael were not 1,000% deserving even. What inspired HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And of course, when we speak about these things, it's really al pi derech musa for us to gain from. These are emotions and actions that really are above and beyond our comprehension when we talk about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Pederach Musar, the takeaway for us is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw this brick. This brick was formed as a result of one person being Naisei Ba'el Im Chaveray. This woman did not have to go out of her home and help her husband do the bricks. But she saw that he was suffering. She saw that it was too difficult for him. She wanted to help him. And so she did what's called being Naisei Ba'el Im Chaveray. She went and she helped her friend, in this case her husband, carry his heavy load. And because of that, she miscarried. She paid a very heavy cost for this. Her baby died. Gavriel took that baby and put it under the Kisei HaKavod. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees this brick, remembers the Tzara of Klal Yisrael, but not just the fact that they went through the Tzara, but the way that they helped one another during the Tzara. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that somebody is able to go above and beyond, leave their comfort to help another person, that inspires HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself as well to go and leave the comfort, as it were, of the Kisei HaKavod and go and help us when we need it. So the inspiration of the Tachas Raglav Kemaisa Libnas HaSapir is the Midah being Naisei Ba'olam Chaver. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees this brick, it reminds him, again, Kaviyachal, of being Naisei Ba'olam Chaver. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees that we have that capacity, that he follows suit. And he's also Naisei Ba'el with us. When we have a tzara, he goes and he helps us and saves us from that tzara because of the same midah of being Naisei Ba'el. We find a very similar concept by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, we had a few parashiyos ago that he was living, of course, in Paro's palace. Ironically, the Mashiach Shal Yisrael was brought up in the palace of Paro. Basya Bas Paro adopted him and she raised him literally in Paro's home. In Paro's home, you can imagine the opulence, you can imagine the luxury, you can imagine the ability that Moshe Rabbeinu could have had to just stay, have a beautiful upbringing, have a very easy life with all of the gashmias that a human being can have. We're talking about Beis Paray. And Moshe Rabbeinu, the Pasuk says, Vayigdal Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu got older, Vayetzel Echav, he goes out to see his brothers. He knew that he was a Yid. He goes out to the field and sees his brothers, Klal Yisrael, going and doing this backbreaking labor, Vayar B'Siv Leisam. And he sees their sivlis, he sees their pain. Rashi says, "Nasan ena v'libay li'es meitzer aleim." He puts his eyes and his heart on them, and he not only says, like we might do, "Ay, terrible," but rather he says, "I want to do something about it." And he places his eyes on them, and he places his heart to commiserate with them, and he becomes one with them. And the Medrash fills in some of the gaps that we don't know from these psukim. In Shema Yisrabah, Perek Aleph, Medrash Chav Zayin, it says on this pasuk, Vayetze Moshe al Echa, Vayar B'Siv Leisam, Sheyaraya B'Siv Leisam. He saw their troubles. Ubaicha, he didn't just stop there, he cried for them. Va'aymer Chavali Aleichem, I am in mourning over you. I'm in, woe is to me because of your plight. Mi yitain maisi aleichem, halavai I should die for you, says Moshe Rabbeinu. Shein lecha malacha kashem imlechas hatit. There is no worse malacha. There is no more difficult, arduous malacha than tit, than cement work, than brickwork. But that didn't stop him from continuing. Vayenaisen kseifav, and he gave over his shoulder, umisayei lechal echad ve'echad mehen, and he helped each and every yid that he saw schlepping and making and doing. What was the response to this being Naseh Ba'alam Chaveri? This is probably the first time, possibly in the Chumash, that we find this concept so clearly of being Naseh Ba'alam Chaveri. How did HaKadosh Baruch Hu respond to Moshe Rabbeinu's being, not just saying, "Ay, terrible," and going weiter? You know, sometimes we look at articles taking place in newspapers, and we see what's going on in Eretz Yisrael, and we go, "Terrible," you know, and then we just scroll down to something else. But some people, when they see something really bad, they start crying about it. They say, "What can I do about it? Is there any way that I can help out?" And so many yidden over the, you know, the past 15 months since October 7th or whatever it was, they didn't just say terrible and talk about it at the Shabbos table, like how awful it is, and speak about the political thing. They actually did something. They went and sent packages over, and they sent equipment over for the Chayalim and sponsored barbecues for them and tried to make it easier for them. People do things. They were nasan ena v'libay liyas meitzer aleim. They didn't just stop and say, you know, terrible, the Eibushta v'etelfen, Hashem should help. They actually tried to help themselves. They were naseh b'olam chaveira. What's the response when a yid is naseh b'olam chaveira? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Medrash continues, ata hinachta iskecha, you left your esek, Moshe Rabbeinu. You were busy in the palace doing whatever you were doing, but you didn't stay there. V'alachta lirais b'tzaren shal Yisrael, and you went to see the tzaras of Klal Yisrael. V'nahagta b'hen minag achim, and you acted like a brother. You acted like a brother. When you see your brother in pain, you go and you try to help. You hug them. You offer to help. You do anything that you can to make their lot easier. I'm going to do the same thing. You were nice, Abel. You left your comfort zone. I'm going to leave my comfort zone. I'm going to come and talk to you and be metapel with you. I'm going to guide you as the Manag Yisrael and get Klal Yisrael out of Egypt. This is all as a direct result of Moshe Rabbeinu being nice, Abel, and Chaveri. And at Kriyas Yamsuf, when Klal Yisrael were, their lives were in the balance, HaKadosh Baruch Hu came down from his Kisei HaKavod again to save them. Why? Because he saw the Libnas HaSapir, which symbolized that woman who went and was Naseh Ba'al with her husband, and Nebuch, she miscarried as a result of that. There's something about being Naseh Ba'al M'Chaveri that is the greatest skula, perhaps, when we need a Yeshua from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he sees that we are being Naseh Ba'al M'Chaveri, then he follows suit. He also comes and helps us from this Kisei HaKavod. Another example of this is, of course, on Purim, which is coming up soon, Shvi B'Sha'a Tova, that the Pasuk says in Perek Dalad, Pasuk Yud Gimel, Megillas Esther, that Mordechai sends word to Esther. Esther was the queen of Achashverosh. She was, again, like Moshe Rabbeinu, in the lap of luxury. She would, no one knew that she was Jewish. She would have been able, probably, to weather the storm of this Gezerah, Rachman al-Litzlan. Mordechai sends word to her, Al tidami binafshich, don't think for a second, li molet beis hamelech mikala noshim, don't think that you're going to be able to find security and safety in the king's palace. He says, Kim hachrish tacharishi, if you're quiet now and you don't step to the plate, revach v'atzol yamed la'yudim makam acher, there's going to be hatzol, Klal Yisrael will be saved. Va'at u'beisavich teved, but you and your father's house will go into oblivion. Who's to say that maybe it was for this moment exactly that you could save Klal Yisrael, that you were put in this position? You weren't put in this palace just for nothing. You weren't put in this palace because of your beauty or your charm. You were put here in order to be activated at this moment to save Klal Yisrael. And Esther did this. She started formulating a plan. Klal Yisrael should fast, and at the end of the 3-day fast period, and she herself was going to fast, she's going to go before Ahasuerus and plead on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And of course, at that moment in time, the entire Gezeiro has been apichu, everything turned over, and Klal Yisrael were saved. Why? What was the turning point? The turning point was that as soon as Esther realized that she couldn't stay safe and secure and just say, "I nebuch on Klal Yisrael, they must be really hard-pressed now. It's difficult times. They sorely Yaakov. But maybe I'll take in my tillim and I'll daven for them, and that'll be it." She said, "No, I have to do something. I have to be nice, but I have to understand that they are in a tzara, and it's my responsibility to do something actively to save them." And as soon as she did that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who was behester upon him during this tkufa, he went and he was matzil Klal Yisrael from their terrible tsar. He was also Naisei Ba'el of Klal Yisrael. This is something that we find that there's great importance for us to do constantly. The great Rishna Rebbe, was, again, somebody we keep speaking about living opulently in palaces. There's no one, I think, in the last several hundred years that lived as opulently as the Rishna Rebbe. Why did he do this? He lived, we have pictures, he lived in a palatial home. And when I say palatial, I mean palatial. It looked like literally a palace. And inside of the palace was every amenity possible. Every gold dish, everything that he used was made of gold, of silver. He drove in a golden carriage, a white horse-drawn golden carriage. He had a golden kapata with golden buttons and golden boots, if you can imagine that. He was a big tzaddik. Until this day, they call him the Heiliger Rishna, the Holy Rishna Rebbe. But he lived with such opulence, and he didn't live, in a place that was opulent. He lived in a place in Eastern Europe, in Russia, that there were many Hasidim, and many of them were penniless. They didn't have the money, and they could barely eat. But yet, the Rishna was living in this palace to the degree that the Tsar of Russia heard about the opulence that he lived in, and he was jealous. You can imagine the Tsar of Russia. The Tsars lived quite well themselves, but he felt that there was like a little bit of a competitiveness between the Rishna Rebbe and himself. In fact, I think the Rishna hired a lot of the Tsar's goldsmiths and silversmiths to make his kalim, and he had him banished from Russia. He went across the border, and he set up shop again in a city called Sadiger. He re-established his court. That's why his son became the Sadiger Rebbe. To this day, is a very chashuv chasidus, primarily, I think, in Yerushalayim, called Sadiger. And also with very opulence, everything is very spitz by them. And there's many, many different branches of the house of Rishon, not just Sadiger, but others as well, all following this hanhaga. The reason why the Rishna was nagging this way is he felt that being the Rebbe, he needed to act in a certain with a certain aristocracy. After all, the Rebbe is really the melech of his Hasidim, and he felt like just in order to play the role of being a melech to his Hasidim, he had to be mura me'am. He had to be above. He can't just live a regular life. He has to live with all of the bells and whistles of the melech, so he did that. But the story goes that once on a Matzah Shabbos, in the frigid, cold city of Rishon, they went out to be Mekadesh Lelvana. And the Rebbe stood there for a long time with his golden boots and his golden frock and his golden, gloves maybe. And he was standing there with all of his kavanas saying Kiddush Levana. And then he went back into his house. And the Hasidim noticed that when he moved off of that patch of ice where he was standing, there was blood in the ice. And it took them a few minutes to try to understand what's this blood coming from. And then they realized that the Rebbe didn't have soles on those golden boots. Yes, he had golden boots, but again, that was just an external act of opulence in order to befit the malchus that he represents. But he never lost sight of the everyday chassid that he had that couldn't afford boots, and that they were suffering and they were starving and they didn't have lechem lechel. So he wore the boots without soles. So he felt the tzar of Klal Yisrael, even in the trappings of malchus. That's what it means to be nice by Elam Chaver. I didn't have to. Could have kept the soles on the bottom of his shoes. That would be normal. Nobody would expect him to do that, but he wanted to feel for another yid. And so that's why he did that. Now, there's a story about Rabbi Eliyachayim Meisels. Rabbi Eliyachayim Meisels was the Rav of the city of Lodz. Lodz is one of the major cities in Eastern Europe. And he was a brilliant Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Eliyachayim. And he was known for being a tzaddik that really took care of the people in his community. There were a lot of, it's a very, very big Jewish community, one of the biggest Jewish communities. And there were people had tzaras, people had, there were very poor people there, as well as wealthy people. And there were people out of work, and he created, a knitting mill. He bought a knitting mill in order to give parnasa to hundreds, maybe thousands of Jews in Lodz. And he used to constantly go and raise money for the poor people. And like I said, there was some very wealthy people in Lodz. One of the wealthiest people, his name was Poznansky. He happens to be famous because he has the renown of having the largest mausoleum in Eastern Europe, at least in the Jewish cemeteries. If you go to the cemetery in Lodz, where Rabbi Eliyachayim is buried, Rabbi Eliyachayim's matseva, by the way, is a beautiful matseva. It looks like a Sefer Torah, like the epitaph is written on, like, as it were, the cloth of the Sefer Torah, made of stone, of course. But then there are two Atzei Chaims on both sides. But in the same cemetery, there is a huge mausoleum. I have in my book, Great Jewish Journeys, where I speak of Rabbi Eliyachayim, I have also a picture of this Poznansky's, it's not even fair to call it a grave. It's like, it's literally like a, looks like the Lincoln Memorial. It's like a huge domed building with these huge marble pillars on it. And it says in big letters, Poznansky. Anyway, so he lived in a very big house, as you could expect. And Rabbi Eliyachayim went and knocked on his door one frigid winter night to go and raise money for the aniyim. And so the butler opens up the door and he says, "Rabbi, come on in." He says, No, is Mr. Poznansky home?" He says, "Yes, he's home, but, come in, it's a nice, warm, crackling fireplace. You can sit and talk to him there." He says, "No." He says, "I'll come in soon, but first I want him to come out." He says, he goes back inside, he comes back. He says, "No, Rabbi, come out, it's so cold." He says, "No, I insist that Mr. Poznansky comes outside to meet with me out." He says, "Why can't you just talk inside? It's so cold." He says, "Please." So the Rabbi of Lodz tells you to do something, you do it. So Poznansky comes out. He says, "Rabbi, it's freezing cold here." He's like, his lips are chattering and his teeth are. And he says, "Come on in." He's like trying to get the, he says, "We'll come in a few minutes. I just want to talk to you first about a very important mission that I'm on." He says, "Okay, Rabbi, what is it?" So he says, "There's a lot of aniyim in town that don't have wood for their fireplaces and for their furnaces, and it's frigid cold. As you could see, it's freezing out here, and I have to raise money to get as much wood and fuel and the ability and clothing for them and for their children. Can you please commit to a certain amount for my fundraising drive?" He says, "Rabbi, fine, whatever you say, let's just go inside." And when they came inside, he said, Rabbi Yechaim, why did you make me stand outside? He says, because when you're sitting inside of your mansion and you're on your couch, you know, by your rug, and the fire is going, and I'm telling you about Aniyim, you're not going to be able to relate to them, because by you it's warm. Only when you go out of your comfort area and you're able to listen to the plight of the Aniyim, you're able to identify, be nice and ena v'libay liyas meitzer aleihem, you're able to say, I can't just be here sitting comfortably. I feel now how cold it is. I understand how they're going to sleep without the proper blankets, without the proper clothing, without the proper heating fuel. Only there can you really understand the plight of a yid. And so I wanted to bring you outside in the cold and then get you to make a commitment properly. Now we could go inside, we could talk nice, we could schmooze, but you have to feel the pain literally. You have to not just say, "Oh, terrible," and go on with your life, but when another yid is in Sara, you have to go and kemaisa livna sasapir. The Eibishter does this. The Eibishter has this ability to be nice ba'al, but it's triggered specifically when we're nice ba'al. And when he sees us going out of our area that we're comfortable, that is geshmak, and we go and we leave that area to help somebody else, like Moshe Rabbeinu, like Esther, like that woman that was helping her husband with the bricks, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu always responds to us. Whenever I speak about these types of inyanim, I always invoke the wonderful organizations that Klal Yisrael has that we take for granted. We all do, but when we need it, Rachman Litzlan, they're there. Hatzalah is a great organization because if you think about it, this is the ultimate organization of being Naisei Ba'al. There, imagine being a Hatzalah ambulance member and you're sitting Friday night in your house and your wife prepared a delicious meal and the kids are around the table and they want to say Divrei Torah, and it's warm in your house, it's freezing outside, there's a hot bowl of matzo ball soup in front of you, and all of a sudden your radio goes off and there's somebody like in your radius. You don't know who it is, you don't even know if it's a yid or a guy, you don't know if it's a yid, who the yid is, how observant he is, how observant he isn't. You have no idea. It's a mystery. But what do? You get on your coat and you get into your car. You leave your family on Shabbos. Now they're there. They have to eat their meal without their father, without their husband. And you go and take this random person to a hospital. You have to wait there until they get admitted sometimes. And you got to do all the things to try to, until the end. You come back. It's 2:00 in the morning. Everyone's sleeping already. You know, maybe there's some cold matzo ball soup still left for you. Is there a greater example of a yid being nice? But they don't get paid for this. It's not their job. But it's the achrayus that they feel. There's another yid that's in Sarah. I have to go and save them. It's on me to say, who's going to save them? So they volunteer and they join the ranks of these tzaddikim and they become people that are literally nice. And I think people in Hatzalah are zeich, I'm sure, to amazing siyat d'shmaya in with their families, with their businesses, with whatever they do, because they are nice. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you think, is ignoring that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sees what they do. He's also going to be nice about and what they need. If they need parnasa, if they need yeshuas, refuas, whatever it is, they're going to get that. And the same thing is true for chaverim. With cars, people, they go out of their houses to help people with flat tires, people with starter problems, people that need to be towed. I've said this story a million times, but I'll say it again. As once, years ago, when Chaverim started in Queens, so I happened to have had their number in my phone, and a Talmud came to me, I think it was early on a Friday morning. We used to give the shmuz at 10:30. Now we give it at 9, but and so he came to me. I was sitting in the base medrash at like 9:30. He says, Rabbi, I have a big problem. I was coming out of my car, and this is a nightmare that I always have, and all of my keys fell into the sewer grate, you know, by the side of the sidewalk. And he says, I could see down there. It's like, you know, 20 feet down, but what am I supposed to do? My whole life is on those keys in my car, in my dorm room, in my house key, in my this key, in my locker key. So I said, you know, I don't know. I'm the mashgiach. I it's a little above my pay grade. I said, but I'll make a hekesh of car, and we'll call chaverim. They just started. Maybe they could do something for you. Anyway, I was standing outside with him waiting for a chaver. I wanted to see what would happen. And I think it was like a chassidish yid, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know what he was doing in Queens. But he came to, he pulls up. He parks on the other side of 150th Street. And he comes over, he says, you know, what's the problem? Is it a starter problem? No. Is it an ignition problem? No. Is it a flat tire? No. Is it a, you know, accident? No. He says, so what is it? I drop my keys down in the grate. And he looks down, and I'm waiting to see, like, what happens. And, like, without batting an eyelash, this Hasidish guy runs across the street, opens up his trunk. He had, like, a tackle fishing box, if you know what that is. Anyone ever went fishing? It's like a box, and you open it up, and it has, like, you know, a lot of things for, you know, whatever you want to put in it. He had a magnet. I kid you not. He had a big magnet, and there was a little, I guess, a circle on the metal magnet, and there was a fishing tackle tied to it. He just starts lowering this magnet down into the sewer, and he brings it up as if it's like the most normal thing in the world, as if he just, like, you know, gave him an ice cream cone. Like, it was like an obvious thing to do, and, like, right in front of our eyes, like, I couldn't believe this. It made such a rush. This is going back quite a long time, maybe 20 years ago. And I remember exactly who the Talmud is. I don't remember the Hasidish guy that it was. But that's being nice to Balam Chavera. For a friend, a Yid has a tzara. There's no bigger, you know, tzara, you know, other than medically, you know, than you're stuck on a highway somewhere, the flat, and you don't know what to do, and, like, no one to help you. And these people come out of their, they might be working, they might be learning, they might be, you know, at home with their families doing homework, and they just go in the middle of the night, cold, hot, doesn't matter, and they go and help. Then there's more balabatisha type of things to do, opening a gemach, a person is in tzara financially, make a gemach, and you start, you know, you give them money when they need it, they're making a simcha, they have a tzara, they lost their job. Who's going to help them? They go and they step to the plate. They're nisei ba'ol im chaveray. And in yeshiva also, you know, we don't need necessarily, if you want, it's great. You don't have to join Hatzalah. You don't have to join chaverim to be nisei ba'ol. All you have to do is look around the yeshiva. Sometimes there's a bachur that you see and he's floundering a little bit. He doesn't get shir. He doesn't, you know, he's not doing well emotionally, he's not doing well socially. And you go and help him. You say, you talk to him, you befriend him, you take him out to a pizza store, you schmooze with him, you help him with Gemara, Lahavdil, you help him with college. And you can mamish be nice with that person. You could help them in a way. You don't have to leave the base matters. You don't have to leave the Kaisleya Yeshiva. But this is also somebody that's being nice about Olam Chaveira. And when we do this, then we could expect Yeshua's to happen to us as well. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also is nice about it. I once had a Rebbe who used to say, how much money would you pay to have every gadol in the world daven for you that you should never have a tzara, you should never have a machla, you should have bracha v'atzlacha in everything that you do. Let's say you could, you know, pay, you know, back then it was Ramesha Feinstein, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Rav Ruderman, the Stipler, those are the Rav Shach, those are the gedolim when I grew up, you know, when I was in high school. And how much would you pay to have all these gedolim daven for you every Shabbos? That you should have these, you pay every millions of dollars if you had it. So I'll give you a much easier eitzah. He says, if you're Isaac b'tzarchei tzibur b'amuna, every gadol is going to daven for you. Because on Shabbos, we have this special tefillah, b'chol misha oisek b'tzarchei tzibur b'amuna, HaKadosh Baruch Hu yishalem scharam, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will repay you He's going to be nice bel with you. He's going to repay you. V'yasimem kol machala, v'yirvul kol gufam. V'yislach l'avam, you're going to have slicha o mechila. All your averas, boom, out the window. Why? Because you were oisik b'tzarchei tzibur. You went and you helped your, you didn't have to. You didn't have to be a gabbai in yeshiva. You didn't have to be the guy that brings cups down from the dining room to the coffee room. You didn't have to be that guy that's makabalan himself to be a balkari on Shabbos or to daven for the amud or to be involved in any part of student government life. You didn't have to do that. But yet you did it. You went out of your ability to just stay, you know, nechbel akelim, just be very, very, you know, in your own corner, doing your own thing, studying for your own test. And you went and said, I see the tzibur needs something, I'm going to fill that hole that's necessary for the tzibur. Every gadol in the world davens for you that you shouldn't have a machwa, you should have bracha v'atzlacha b'chol ma'aseh yadeichem. Why? Because you did something out of the ordinary. You left your place in order to save another yid and rescue him. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will rescue you from all the tzaras and all the machlas and all the averis and all the things that we need to be rescued from. Mida keneged mida, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds in kind. The livnas hasapir, that sapphire brick symbolizes the ability to be nice about him, chavere, and the quid pro quo that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds when we're nice about him, chavere. And so if we need Yeshuas, and we all need Yeshuas, and Klal Yisrael needs Yeshuas, the best way to do it is to look beyond our Dalet Amos. Naturally, a human being just stays within his Dalet Amos and worries about himself. What do I need to do to further my career? What do I need to do to be better in learning? What do I need to do to get married, to start a family, to buy a house, to buy a car? What do I need? And those are important things to worry about. Obviously, clearly you have to worry about yourself. But the special, unique individuals, they are nice and ain of a libai. They look at Klal Yisrael. That's godless. Vayigdal Moshe. Godless means I'm expanding my range, my radius from my own Dalet Amos, my own. The Shimon Shkup writes about this in his Akdama to the Shaar Yasher about how somebody great expands the ani. We have what? Who is your ani? Who is you? Who am I? So naturally, when I'm a baby, I'm just me, and when I'm a teenager, I'm really just me. And then I get older and my me becomes other people. It could be my wife. It's also an extension of me. My children are an extension of me. My parents are an extension of me. And then my yeshiva is an extension. My community is the Jewish world is an extension of me. The more that you extend that ani, the more a gadol you are. The Chazon Ish used to say that a yid is like a circle. And the bigger the circle, meaning the more people you invite into your circle, the greater a person you are. So a gadol means somebody that takes Klal Yisrael into their circle. A gadol is somebody, if you see by the Levayas of Gedolim, you see this how big their circle was. You see, you know, how Reb Chaim Kanievsky and Reb Adi Yosef and all the Gedolim, when they're nifter, they have close to a million people, 800,000 people, 500,000 people, Rebbe Yashiv, you know, these are massive Levayas, and it's not just Hasidim that come or Litvaks that come. You see people from all walks of life. You see people with Kippah Surgaz, you see Chilonim, you see their Libay was Levav Kol Yisrael. That's what godless is. Godless means I'm a gadol. What does it mean? I'm big. I'm a giant. Was Rebbe Moshe Feinstein a giant? Rebbe Moshe Feinstein was a very small man. Godless means that I'm taking responsibility for more and more yidden. I feel their pain. I feel if there's a tzara, I have to try to do something. If there's a shidduch crisis, what am I going to do to help another yid? I spoke to a girl who was looking for a shidduch the other day on the phone, and she said to me, well, long story, but basically I asked her if in her circles, when a friend goes out with a guy and it doesn't work out, does she think of other people? You know, you just spent 3 hours with a boy and you know, 20, 30, 50 girls, like, can't you think of somebody, you know, to find, you know, one girl of your friends might be a good idea for, and vice versa. If you go out with a girl, you know, and it didn't work out, fine, okay, so, but maybe it's good for my chavrusa, maybe it's good for my roommate. That's one small way of helping a little bit the shidduch crisis. I asked her if you do, she says, no, by me, there's a lot in my circles, and I'm not going to say which circles it is, but there's a lot of, it's very competitive. And the girls all want to be married, and they don't want, the last thing they want is to help other people get married. Because if they get married, then that means I'm still single, they're married, and that's not geschmack. So they'd rather not do, you know, be nice about Baal, because that's not a, that I'm not saying that that's a human, I understand it, it's human, but it's not godless. Godless means I don't care about me, you're me. He's me. I'm trying to see other people in a tzara, and maybe I can help. If I have a job in a firm, and you're doing well, Baruch Hashem, don't just say, okay, I'm doing well, I don't want to rock the boat and try to, you know, what happens if I get somebody else a job and he's not so good, how's that going to reflect? That's true, that might be a consideration, but that's a consideration for a little person. A big person says, there are yidden out there that don't have jobs, they're unemployed, it's embarrassing for themselves, there's no dignity if a person doesn't have a job and he's working and he's out of work. You know how humiliating that is? His wife, you know, looks at him different. His kids look at him different. His, you know, his community looks at him different. If I'm in a position, if I'm in an accounting firm, I'm in a law firm, or I'm in a, you know, any business or any yeshiva, whatever, and I can help somebody else get a position, put your gaiva away, put your fears away, put your and try as best you can to help. And there are people that do this. There's people. There's organizations that do this. And you know, I get emails with job listings that people tell the lister about jobs in their firm. There might be an accounting job, might be a manager of a warehouse, it might be a, you know, an IT guy, and you list it, and then people could send their resumes to you or to the firm directly, and that's an amazing chesed. If I just worry about myself, then I'm just me. I'm just ani in the most basic way, but if I'm able to actually help other people, be nice and ain of a libai, and see other people's tzara and say, what can I do to help? Not just, I feel so bad, the guy lost his job. And that's where it ends? What are you doing about it? What am I doing about it? What are we gonna, how are we gonna help? And when we're able to step out of our own safety and security and say, I don't wanna be safe and secure if my brother is not. Let me see what I could do. Let me pick up a phone, make some phone calls, do something, anything. And that's important just independently, even without an ischar. But we should know from this parasha and all the parashas that we mentioned that when a person is able to go and be Isaac b'tzarchei tzibur b'emunah and care about another yid and go outside his square and his circle and be able to help other people, reach out to other people, HaKadosh Baruch Hu likewise comes down from his Kisei HaKav min ha'alyanim min ha'tachtanim, and he goes and he comes to our rescue. He's Yishalem Scharim, and Amir Hashem, we should be Zeicha to be counted amongst those special Yidden that are Isaac B'Tzarchei Tzibur B'Amunah. Have a wonderful Shabbos, everybody.